Hello and welcome to the Raptor Show, powered by DoorDash on Sportsnet 590, The Fan. I'm your host, Wim Liu, and I am joined by producer and co-host Alex Wong. Alex, this is an audio medium, but we have to highlight your outfit today because you received some gifts from fans. What happened here?
Yeah, I'm wearing my brand new Nick Nurse black NN hat. Shouts to a member of Team Alex, Andrew Kong. He hit me up last week, let me know that he actually had a few extra hats that he had picked up, and he obviously listens to our show and knows that I've talked about this hat for months and on, and I had a chance to meet up with him today to pick up the hat. And you know, when two Asians meet up to swap gifts, you know, I have to bring my own gift too. So he received, as you might imagine, a signed copy of Cover Story and a Cover Story t-shirt. So we did a little gift swap. And, you know, right after I picked up the hat, obviously, you know, I was so excited. I put the hat on. I posted it all across social media. But before that, I had actually sent you a DM to let you know about this. And you were a little bit upset.
I was upset because, as people who listen to the show remember, for most of December, we teased the fact that we were going to do a Secret Santa gift swap on air. And I have been, as soon as this idea came up and as soon as I got you in our three-person world's smallest Secret Santa.
Oh, you got me? I had no idea. I had no idea who had drawn me. Yeah.
As soon as that happened, I went on the Nick Nurse Foundation and I bought you the red and white Nick Nurse hat, and I was going to surprise you. But unfortunately, due to COVID and all this kind of stuff, we haven't seen each other in almost a month. Plus, you just couldn't get your gift for our producer in time? What happened there? We could have totally done this before Christmas, but in any case.
Yeah, Will.
So yeah,
Will, it's the year 2022. We're not here to talk about the past. We're looking forward only. So I really appreciate it, though. You sent me the photo of the red hat. Red NN hat, I should clarify, that you got me, and I'm excited about it. You know, there's a 50-50% chance I might re-gift it to Derek, but we'll have to see whenever it's safe again to have our Secret Santa on April 1st. Happy April Fools, everyone.
No, I feel like April Fools right now, man. I can't believe, I was so excited to give you this hat. Luckily, I do have other items for you as well, you know, just because you're that close of a friend to me, but
You know what we'll do? Maybe we'll give away that red hat. We'll do some kind of raffle for the fans because, you know, listeners have been just so gracious to us, you know, in terms of leaving 5-star reviews, leaving 1-star reviews. And, you know, every time I walk downtown with you, Will, you know, if there's any Asian person within, you know, 6 feet, they recognize you. I'm not even kidding. Like, I have firsthand seen people pull their cars over just to say hi to Will Liu. So I think we should give back. So maybe with that extra Nick Nurse hat that you initially bought for me, you know, I love re-gifting. Maybe we can find a way to give back to the fans as well. With your permission, of course.
Yeah, absolutely. And let's get this thing signed by Nick too, man. Let's increase the value of this. It's not like we don't have that kind of reach.
All right, let's see. Let's go find out exactly what our reach is. I don't know if you want to find out exactly where we are on the hierarchy. So, but you know, anything you ask, your producer Alex will take care of. So that was the top news item of the day. Alex acquires NN hat. Shouts again to my guy, Andrew Kong. Second biggest news item in Raptors land. The Raptors are on a 4-game win streak after a 117-111 win in Milwaukee last night. I term this a pretty hilariously entertaining game. On an entertaining level, it was really a 10 out of 10 for me. The Raptors are 18-17. They are over 500 for the first time since early November. And if we're checking the standings, they are 7th in the East and right there to get into the top 6. But honestly, no need to look at the standings right now, Will. They're just playing good basketball. And if they keep playing good basketball, the standings is going to take care of themselves, right?
Yeah. But it is nice to get over 500. You know, we get some nice treats. You know, you obviously dropped your bars, did a little slander pod yesterday as well. And you know what? The best part about it is just the Raptors are playing well. Like, I love seeing their effort last night. It was a 29-point turnaround between the fact that they were down 14 in the second quarter. And then by the time the fourth quarter rolls around, midway through, they're up 15. And they're in full command of the game on the road in a hostile environment. And you might say, well, look, the Bucks didn't have Giannis. You know, Brook Lopez has been out for a lot of the year. you know, of course, these are important caveats. But at the same time, like, the Bucks were taking it to the Raptors, man. 77 points in the first half. And, you know, I wanted to see the Raptors respond from that. You know, like, you could easily have, you know, rolled over and said, well, you know, third game in four nights, we're a little tired, whatever. Now, forget all that, man. Everybody's a little tired. It's the pandemic's been going on for 3 years, okay? So let's see what your character is about. And the Raptors showed it. I mean, that third quarter, only 11 points scored by Milwaukee. That just an incredible defensive turnaround when you consider the fact that Milwaukee had 77 points at halftime and then scored a grand total of 34 points in the second half. So the Raptors literally have their offensive production. When you think about 42 points by Milwaukee in the first quarter alone, 35 in the second quarter alone, they couldn't even get to 34 points for the entire second half. So it was a great effort to see. I love seeing the Raptors, you know, lock in here. And it seems like their starting five is also just really so productive of late. When you think about Pascal with 33, OG with 22, Fred with 19, Gary with 22. Like, that's almost enough scoring just to win the game, just right there between four guys.
Yeah, well, there's two ways to win in the regular season, right? Like, you know, one way is to have a lot of depth, and you've seen a lot of teams over the years, even some of the Raptors teams, be able to bring these second units, you know, bench mobs off the bench in over 82 games. You know, if you take care of business, you're going to win a lot of games. The other way to do it is to just be really top heavy and have a lot of star players. And right now the Raptors have star players. Like, mm-hmm. you know, we're going to get into Pascal. Actually, let's just get into Pascal right now, because 33 points, 6 assists, 5 rebounds, 3 steals, 1 block, 2 3-pointers, 13 of 23 from the field. I mean, I was thinking about it this morning. I know Pascal's played on bigger stages, and we can obviously point to the NBA Finals, what he did in Game 1, what he did in Game 6. But if you're just looking at him as a basketball player, I mean, was last night like his best performance ever? Like, I don't even think that's hyperbole. Like, he's playing the best stretch of basketball in his career right now, in my opinion.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to say definitively, but I thought he did everything in his game well, right down to even catching and shooting for three, which hasn't been an element that has been reliable for him for the last two seasons. But, you know, he was knocking those threes down as well. The mid-range game, he looks so smooth in that area. Guys are always playing him to drive because he's been so good at getting into the paint and either kicking it out or taking it all into the basket. So guys are giving him a little bit of a step there in the mid-range area, anticipating which way he might go. And he's just shooting right over the top of these guys. The patience that he's showing, there's this one play where he had it in the post against Jordan Nwora. You know, he saw that the Bucks were trying to send help from the top with Rodney Hood. He saw that DeMarcus Cousins was, you know, working the from the baseline there. He was going to help right at the basket. And Pascal just kept waiting, making sure that these guys, you know, would have to clear out eventually to avoid a three-second violation. And then as soon as these guys took one step out to try to reset the count, Pascal made a lightning quick spin move and got to the rim for a layup. He was awesome. The transition's there. The defense is there. Three steals, the block. One of the, you know, it was very key for him to do some of that stuff too, because the Raptors were showing double teams towards both Chris Middleton and Jrue Holiday at the perimeter, trying to blitz them, force them to get rid of the ball. And when those guys sort of throw it inside, Pascal was sort of playing two guys at once, trying to cover up that zone. And he was able to pick it off a few times to get the Raptors out in transition. So, I mean, it was all there. I mean, even his confidence was there, because late in the game, in the last minute, when the referees decided to narrow the gap, right, Bobby Portis steams down the floor, puts an elbow in Pascal's neck, and somehow that's a foul on Pascal. Bobby Portis goes to the free throw line. He misses that first free throw. And all you hear on the broadcast is Pascal yelling from the foreground, "Yes, sir," because, you know, he's just feeling himself right now. He's feeling really good, man. And why not? 42 minutes, this is a great performance. There's nothing to nitpick about this at all.
No, this is like the best you can ask for from Pascal, in my opinion. And if Matt Devlin's going to keep calling Fred VanVleet Freddy All-Star, you know, we got to start calling Pascal All-NBA, because he is playing at that level right now. By the way, Bobby Portis was hilarious. End of the game, he, you know, I know I only have three comparisons always on this show, but he really did remind me of you at the Raptors Republic 3-on-3 tournament. I felt like at one point I felt like after one of those foul calls, he was just going to punt the ball into the stands, and it just turned into an unnecessary, like, final minute of the game. Like, at no point did I feel like the Bucks were actually going to come back, even though they were closing in on the scoreboard. And there was Bobby Portis and Thanasis. I know you mentioned this on your React pod with Assad. It's always great to hear you and Assad on the postgame show. Thanasis was celebrating a Bobby Portis block, but it was like a 2-3 possession game with 30 seconds left. I was like, what are we doing here?
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, that's his thing. That's Bobby's thing. Like, that's why Milwaukee loves him, because, you know, he gets the crowd going. He's provocative. But at the same time, you know, he just wasn't a factor in the game. Like, he fouled out. His last foul of the game, he was, like, trying to rip OG's arms off, trying to commit an intentional foul. Like, bro, what happened to just wrapping a guy up?
Yeah, shouts to OG, too. A very quiet 22 points, but efficient. Mm-hmm. And,
super,
you know,
efficient, Garrett, man.
Yeah, super efficient.
10 shots and for 22 points is outrageous.
I honestly didn't even notice him. And when I checked the box score, he had 22. And, you know, another guy who had 22 was Gary. And, you know, Gary finds his own way to get to his own 22 points.
Oh, yeah.
I'm loving watching Gary just as a shot maker. You know, I think the type of player that Gary is, it's been termed as like a rational confidence guy, right? You know, I think that's the most popular term. But he just fits well with this starting lineup, and he was a menace on defense, at least the second half, because I don't think anybody was trying in the first half.
Yeah, nobody was a menace on defense in the first half. Let's be real. Milwaukee gave up 68 points of their own. Like, the Raptors' offense was just flowing, right? Fred was nailing all these wild threes, and OG was hitting every shot, and Pascal getting downhill. Like, you know, the offense was at no real issues. But yeah, defensively, the Raptors giving up 77 is just way too much. But yeah, it's, to your point about Gary, I love going back after games. You know, after I do the React Pod, my process is, okay, I'm going to sit down. I got to write 10 things, usually about 1,000.
Oh, behind the scenes. People love hearing the Will Lou process. Let me hear this, man.
Yeah, so then I go to the NBA stats page. There's a, you know, they have the video box scores where you can sort of click to see the individual plays. So not only are you seeing that Gary was 8 of 17 for 22 points, let me just click that 8 number on the box score and see what those 8 individual shots were. And outside of one play where the Raptors ran a double screen along the baseline for Gary to go to the corner, really good execution. Fred finds him, and Gary hits a routine corner three. Outside of that, the 7 other makes were all variations of semi-contested to like heavily contested difficult shots. And that's what you're saying when you're talking about the irrational confidence. It's not irrational confidence so much as he understands that he has trained to take these specific shots, because when the games get really tough, when it becomes a fight, Gary's always the one joining the fight, right? Like, he's not backing down from any of these challenges. So when the game gets intense, when it's sort of like possession by possession and momentum sort of swinging in the balance, Gary's willing to take those shots. When you think about what he did in the third quarter there, you know, a play where the ball swings over to him, he attacks the closeout, the defense is there, it looks like, okay, he's probably just gonna give it up, right? And he's like, nah, I'm gonna sidestep and take a fading baseline 20-footer and nail that, right? Or another play where he's isolated at the top of the floor, 5 seconds left. The Bucks seem like, okay, they got a good defensive possession going here. Gary Trent jab steps, pretending to sell the drive, and then steps back. Great footwork to get his feet behind the line, settle himself, straighten himself, and then pop in the three. Like, there's a lot of these difficult shots that Gary was making over the course of the night, and I really love that about him. Like, he's just not shy whatsoever. If he misses a shot, it just doesn't affect him. He's still going to have the confidence to take the next one. And for him, I think there's a careful balance to be made. Okay, you're doing versus you're bailing us out. And I think Gary has consistently been on the right side this season. You know, of course he's had games where, you know, even when his first game coming back against Philly, he was like 6 of 24 or whatever. The Raptors were shorthanded. Like, you didn't even mind that so much because you understood what the situation was. But in a game like this, when the Bucks did have, you know, some pretty good defensive intensity at times in the fourth quarter, Gary was the one who was the one bringing it home, because it wasn't Fred anymore. Fred was hounded by Drew Holiday, who is one of the best defenders in the league. Although I got to say, Fred defended Drew better than Drew defended Fred. So you needed somebody to bring in the game, and Gary was a guy making a lot of these momentum shifting shots, and just got to give him his flowers, man. You got to really appreciate this guy. Plus 14 at 31 minutes. I mean, you know, as the returning piece for the Norman Powell trade, like, that's the one thing Norm always did, was he made sure to cook the Bucks, and Gary Trent made sure to carry on that legacy.
Yeah, shout out to Gary. You know, the one thing I want to see, because, you know, his confidence is obviously through the roof. I want to see him one time, maybe in a blowout, when he gets to shoot free throws at the end, to just step back and shoot it from the three-point line. Just shoot your free throws, because if there's one player in the league that I feel like would do that well, it's probably Steph, to be honest. But I just want to see the level of confidence that Gary can ascend to. But honestly, like, all jokes aside, just a impressive season from him so far. Like, we've spotlighted his defense, and I think I agree with everything that you say about his offense. I almost feel like, because the game is so analytically driven now, and, you know, we look at the game maybe differently than, you know, when I used to watch basketball in the 1940s, is that, like having these guys who just make ridiculous shots, like shot makers like Gary, it's almost like a lost art. You know, I feel like we used to appreciate those players more, but now obviously when you're looking at maybe, you know, the shot profiles of players and things like that, it draws more criticism. But like you mentioned, man, I think Gary just fits perfectly. And I love that you mentioned the Norm trade, because we got to update that trade now. So originally it was OG and Norm for Gravis Vasquez. So now it has turned into OG and Gary for Gravis Vasquez. So this trade just keeps on getting better year after year.
Yeah, we got to give that Nick Nurse hat to Gravis Vasquez, man. He deserves
it. I'm not giving my Nick Nurse hat to anybody, but sure, yeah. Like, this hat is now permanently stuck to my head.
Yeah, fair enough. By the way, I really, when you feel comfortable going back to the arena again, I really want you to walk by Nick in touch. I took myself behind the scenes of, like, how I write some of the 10 things and stuff like that. I want to take listeners behind the scenes of how Alex gets some of his tweets off at the arena, because what he does, he arrives at the arena about an hour and a half before the game, you know, and then he'll just get down to the floor level, and then he'll just linger around the court. He knows all the photographers because he's written about all of them, you know, just like he's written about all the graphic, you know, designers in the Raptors space. Like, you know, he's got great connections. And the reason he does that is so that he can get all these fit pics off courtside from these professional photographers who are usually there to take photos of players. They're like, no, let me just get a picture of Alex. So you're already doing the lingering beside the court anyway before the game. So just make sure you do that with Nick around. I just want to see the reaction. I'm sure he'll get a kick out of it too, because I do wonder if Nick actually goes around walking, you know, in the city or whatever, and actually runs into people wearing this hat, his own personal hat.
Appreciate you giving Raptors PR more reason to ban me from the arena on air. You know, I can always count on you. I can always count on you for that. No, most of this segment is fiction. No, but you know what? I should just hop on a Zoom. I think he'll trip out if I just hopped on a Zoom and I asked him a question on video with the NN hat. Wow. Like,
I was going to say, because I've actually never seen you ask a question on Zoom. What would you ask Nick?
I would ask him to come on the show to do the real interview of the century. You know, he had a great interview with JJ Redick on Old Man and the Three podcast, but the real interview of the century that people are waiting for is you and Nick Nurse. You know, I think that would be a great sit down. So we have to make it happen. I don't see any reason why we can't make that happen this season. But I don't even know what we're talking about. I feel like we have segued into the NN hat about three times this segment, which I'm thrilled about. Oh, we were talking about, the OG and Norm for Gravis trade keeps getting better. And I can't really explain it. I don't know if you agree with me. Even though the Bucks are defending champions, and listen, there was no Giannis last night, but as I always say, there was also no Kawhi. Like, I can't explain it, but, like, I always look at Milwaukee. Milwaukee's the one team in the NBA that I look at as, like, Toronto is the big brother and Milwaukee is the little brother. Like, I don't know if it's because we, quote-unquote, swept them in 2019, like you always mentioned, with the four straight wins in the conference finals, and we obviously beat them before in the playoffs as well. I even think about last year during the Tampa season, there was a schedule quirk where the Raptors played back-to-back games in Milwaukee and they won both.
Yep.
Like, that was one of the highlights of the season. I just feel like even though the rosters have changed over, even though the Bucks are champions now, Giannis is obviously a much different player from when he first came into the league, even from that 2019 series. I just feel like the Raptors always just own Milwaukee a little bit in a way that they don't any other team.
Yeah, and the thing is, it's the perfect opponent in the sense that you do fear them because they're legitimately a very good team. And they have Giannis, right? They didn't, you know, have Giannis the last two games. The Raptors have played them, but whatever. But, you know, you do have this fear about them. And they're going to give up a pretty good fight. The games are close. But then when it comes down to the very end of it, the Raptors are going to win. The Raptors are 29-13 in the regular season and the playoffs versus the Bucks since 2013-2014, which is when Giannis entered the league. 29-13. I honestly think that, like, outside of, like, the really bad teams, like the Orlandos or, like, you know, New York or Sacramento and these kind of teams. Actually, I don't know. I remember Sacramento beating the Raptors a few times too. Like, I don't know if the Raptors have a better, like, winning record against winning teams other than Milwaukee like this, because, I mean, we just, you know, the Raptors just come in every year, and once a year I do a slander pod on Milwaukee. It's like an actual annual tradition at this point. And I think obviously you respect Giannis, right? I think there's nothing to not respect but Giannis. Jrue Holiday scares me quite a bit because of just how strong he is. He's just like pushing guys around, and you know, he's a very good player. And past that, like Chris Middleton, yes, I know the numbers are good. Yes, I did watch the playoffs last year. He hit a number of tough shots. I get it, but like, I don't know. Seeing this man try to dribble around any Raptors guards, it's always a hilarious experience because it just seems like he can't do it. Every time the Raptors like get into him and disrupt his dribble, like there's so many times in the playoffs I can just you know think about right now where the Raptors crowded Chris Middleton and he gave up the ball. Like it was just it's a little easy to disrupt him. Like you know, remember the 26-3 run by the Raptors in Game 6 where the Raptors swept the Bucks. That play where Kawhi dunked on Giannis, that whole play is Middleton's fault because he went behind his back for some reason against Fred VanVleet with Kyle Lowry, you know, showing a soft double team. Why would you try to go behind the back? You're not a guy who goes behind the back. You shoot mid-range jumpers and threes really well, but behind the back is not your specialty. Tries to go behind his back. Fred and Kyle pick him off, and then Kyle takes it the other way, turns it around to Kawhi for the dunk. That whole play is his fault. So, I don't know. The rest of the team, I just can't fully, you know, throw my respect behind. But, you know, it's just great to see Milwaukee on the schedule, you know. And hopefully we'll get to actually see Giannis play the Raptors eventually, because I would have really liked to see how the Raptors' big lineups would have handled a guy like Giannis, who definitely requires that amount of size on the floor to sort of neutralize what he does. But, you know, still, I'll take the win. The Raptors are going above 500. This is great.
No, this is great, man. Everything is better when the Raptors are over 500. You know, the bubble tea tasted better this morning. The lettuce on the Big Mac I just ate, you know, was just crispier than usual.
Yeah, I think that's really all I your ate raps, huh?
Anyways,
these aren't lies when you're talking about.
The only fictional things you talk about is my behavior at the arena. Before we move off,
the game, if they ban you, they got to ban every single person in the arena, bro. I'm just saying.
Fred had 19 points on the block of the year. Best in-game block I've seen since LeBron on Andre Iguodala in Game 7 of the finals. And shouts to Justin Champagne as well. Just, I don't know, man. Just pure positive vibes. This is, I think, who Nick Nurse thought Pat McCall was going to be. But Justin Champagne is just doing all the right things when he's on the floor. Do you want to say anything about him?
Yeah, man. I think, you know, you as the producer, man, we got to get Justin Champagne interviews on the program. I mean, obviously right now it's difficult. I totally understand. I'm not like pressing whatsoever. I'm literally isolating. So, you know, there's no reason.
It sounded like you were pressing me. I also love, this is the efficiency I want from this show, that we're just going to start planning our shows on air. So yeah, I'm going to put Justin Champagne on the list. You know, if Ryan Favreau is listening, I'm not going to send you an email on Sunday. We want Justin Champagne. You can do it on Zoom. You can
Let's do it on Zoom. Let's do it on Zoom. I think
interview of the century. Interview of the century with Justin Champagne coming. So,
I mean, I just want to get to know more about him. You know what I'm saying? Like,
no,
like,
I hear you.
You know, he's got a brother who just dropped 34, right? And apparently, his brother Julian keeps calling him during games. And I don't know, man. Even though they're like 20 years old, like for me, I'm 29. I never leave voicemails because to me that feels, you know, like a thing of the past. I know for you that was like all the rage when it came out.
That's enough, man. I can't wait. 30s. I can't wait till you turn 30, man. I cannot wait till you turn 30.
Next year's going to be one of the 2 years, I think, that you and I are both in the same. You
know, both in the same decade?
yeah, so, you know, that will be interesting. The content will be much more mature at that point. But right now,
this guy got COVID. He's isolating and still coming through with the age jokes, man. I'm never going to escape these. I can't believe it. By the way, I'm not doing bars again until they, like, clinch a playoff spot, man. You know what? Writing bars is really hard, man. If we're being transparent, I can't do this anymore.
Is it hard for you, bro? Because you came up with those in like an hour, man.
No, you understand, man. I need to take like certain, what's the proper word for it? Medication. And, you know, I need to really just get into my bag. So, you know, for people that do appreciate the bars, you know, let's take a little bit of a break from that. Maybe if the Raptors go 10 games over 500. And for people who absolutely hate the bars, you know, congratulations. Happy New Year. This is your day. So before we move on.
They call you Barb Albert out here.
I can't believe this.
Nobody calling you that. Just like nobody said Pascal Rodman, by the way.
But we need to investigate that. He's like, they've been calling me Pascal Rodman. Who like, they? Who, man? Nate Bjergen? Did Nate Bjergen say this in a film session? Like, can we get to the bottom of this? So we'll talk about Tyler Tynes' great GQ feature of Masai in a second. We've got him coming in the second segment. But I just want to quickly run through a few more things about the Raptors. So they start a three-game homestand with Utah coming in on Friday, followed by New Orleans and Phoenix. So assuming the teams are healthy, there will be a couple of good tests, I think, to see exactly where the Raptors are at. And since they're over 500, you know, we got to rev up the propaganda machine again. I was looking at the schedule. They're 9-4 in their last 13. And if you look at the four losses, it was the Justin Champagne. Yeah. So, okay. So the fake loss to Cleveland, 45 points. You can say the loss to Philly was fake as well. They lost by five, didn't have a full roster. They actually had the lead in the final minutes of the game. They lost in overtime to Brooklyn. And the fourth loss was the Justin Champagne buzzer beater that was too late against OKC. All I'm trying to say is if you look at their last 13 games, even through the health and safety protocols, even through the injuries, the Raptors just have been playing really well. And they've been giving themselves a chance to win pretty much every night, except on nights when Tremont Waters and Juwan Morgan have to meet Nick Nurse 30 minutes before tip-off to learn three plays. So I don't know. Things are looking up. And again, like I said at the start, like I'm not even going to look at the standings, because if the Raptors have a good January and they can take this into February into the All-Star break, I think they're going to be in a pretty good spot. And, you know, it was hard to say that even like 2 weeks ago.
Absolutely. Yeah. No, you're right, man. Things are turning up. Like, as I said in the Rack Pod, the Raptors are the only good thing in Ontario right now. So we just got to savor these.
Yeah, that and my guy Andrew Kahn coming through the NN hat. By the way, the first fan voting results were announced today, and Fred VanVleet is 10th amongst all guards in the Eastern Conference. DeMar DeRozan leads the way with over 1 million votes. You've got James Harden, Trae Young, Zach LaVine, LaMelo Ball, Kyrie Irving, Derrick Rose getting the Asian fan bump again, Tyler Hero, Darius Garland. They're all ahead of Fred. So I guess nothing new. It looks like Fred's going to have to find his way to the All-Star game from the coaches voting in the bench players.
Yeah, absolutely. We knew that, though. This is not a, not a surprise.
It's not a surprise. Not a surprise at all. So let's talk a little bit about GQ's Tyler Tynes, who wrote a great feature about Masai. Got a chance to hang out with him in the lead-up to opening night this season. I know you've had a chance to read the article. You know, I think there were some things in there that probably us locally, you know, when Masai was talking about how difficult the DeMar Kawhi trade was, talking about his run-in, you know, in Oakland after the championship, but also a lot of great insight into just Masai the person and the things that drive him and what a day in the life of Masai is like. I know you're going to talk to Tyler about this in the second half of the show, but any main takeaways or things for you?
Yeah, man. I think just every single story about Masai, I just eat it up, because he's just the one guy that within the Raptors organization that you just want to know everything about, right? You want to know how he thinks. You want to know how he leads. You want to know how he moves, how he treats people, because he just has that energy about him. And I love just hearing about his mindset that we'll talk to Tyler about as well. But he had this one quote in this. He said, Masai said, quote, "Yes, we all want to be ambitious, but passion will lead you to incredible places. This is where the game finds me today, and I will serve it with every last breath in my body, with all the blood in my body. I believe in the game that much," end quote. And wow. I'm like, damn, that's me.
Yeah, that's you, like, and that's for real. That's me when you asked me to come up with bars. You know, I'm going to have to tape that quote on my desk for future references. No, but it's a great story, and I can't wait to hear you talk to Tyler about it. So I guess I'm signing off for this show, and I'm just going to be a fan for the second half.
As usual. So we're going to take a quick break right here. Actually, during this break, go read 5 a.m. in Toronto with Masai Ujiri on GQ. It's really good. And yeah, when we come back, we'll discuss that story. I've been your host, Will Liu. You're listening to The Raptor Show, powered by DoorDash on Sportsnet 590, The Fan. Welcome back to The Raptor Show, powered by DoorDash on Sportsnet 590, The Fan. I am joined by GQ staff writer Tyler Tynes. Tyler, thanks for your time, man.
What's happening? What's good? Appreciate you.
I appreciate you, first off, from the city of Toronto, because you wrote about probably the most popular man in Toronto. I'm not even kidding, man. Masai Ujiri, a great piece on GQ that you just dropped, 5 a.m. in Toronto with Masai Ujiri. And let's actually start with the title right there. Obviously, that's a play on the track by Drake. But Masai's, what is he actually doing 5 a.m. in Toronto? What's 5 a.m. in Toronto with Masai like?
Man, he getting to the money. He getting to the business. You know, he's out here working out. I mean, I kind of got dropped off at the OVO Center, the practice facility, around 5:30. And as soon as I walked in, he had been working out. He was working out even before I got there, which was even before the sun got up. So what is he doing at 5 a.m.? He's working out, like exactly as we said. And not a very straightforward workout either.
Yeah, okay. So what do you mean by that, though? Because the thing is, everyone wants the details of on the side. Like, there's no detail you can share in the next 20 minutes or so that people will not want to hear. So what's Masai doing in the workouts? Because the way you're describing it, man, this guy, well, what's he like? It feels like he's training to play. He's not just training to make trades. He's training to play for the Raptors, man.
No, I mean, that's what I mean, man. I mean, it is as described. You know, I try when we go to these things and we do these profiles, we try not to leave any stone unturned. And so it is exactly as it's described. I mean, you walk in there and he's playing music and, you know, he's in workout gear and he's holding these two Home Depot buckets going around the length of the floor with, you know, Ray Chow right behind him. And, you know, he has a smile on his face and he's kickboxing during his rest periods. And, you know, I did the workout with him. They insisted I try to do this workout. Okay. And, it wasn't nothing soft, man, is all I'm going to say. You know what I mean? Okay. So he really is out there getting after it.
Yeah, well, you forget Masai's over 50, man, because, he looks incredible. You know, the way he carries himself is incredible. So for your perspective, so you come into this piece as an outsider, and then you get to sort of discover over the course of sort of doing the story where, you know, you're around Toronto's home opener at Scotiabank Arena, and, you know, which the Raptors unfortunately lost, but, you know, the energy in that building was incredible that day. So, but you come in as an outsider, and then you get to discover essentially like how much Masai is revered here. And you even have a quote from Masai himself, which is such a bar. He said, quote, "Sometimes I don't want to be bothered by anyone or anything. I can never go out in the crowd. It would be a riot." Yeah, I mean, tell us. Obviously, everyone here in Toronto knows how much that Masai is revered here in the city. But as an outsider coming in, were you surprised at all based on just sort of the reception Masai has and sort of the
Yeah, I mean, it was certainly revealing, or at least, you know, the side of Toronto that I got, because I certainly won't use it as, you know, a large paintbrush for the entire city, a place as diverse and beautiful as Toronto is. You kind of get a glimpse of some of, you know, the fanatical behavior where you have fans literally bowing in front of him in the rain outside of Union Station, where even on that walk that he and I took from Scotiabank to Union, that 5 or 7 minutes, you know, kind of underground in those tunnels, there were other fans, you know, trying to stop him as he walked past so he can kind of have a high five, or like, you know, kind of making a bench position so they have to like jump over him. Like it was absolutely wow. Ridiculous. it has been a very long time, if ever, that I've seen somebody in such a position of power be revered, like I said, almost as much as his players are. And so it was very, very interesting, and specifically to see somebody black to be in that position, to have the reverence of so many different people in a country. We went to a humanitarian gala right before the game, and we're sitting there with the, I think, the Lieutenant of Ontario and some of the people who are in the press in Toronto and Canada, and just how these people looked at him, how they were on his every word as he gave a speech. It's very clear that Toronto appreciates Masai Ujiri, if nothing else.
Yeah, I think you got a quote by someone in here just telling Masai you should run for office. Like, I mean, he could, but I feel like he could do something even more with that. And so let's get into the man himself, though. Like, clearly he's very driven, right? When you think about the fact that he's up at 5 a.m. and, you know, he's lifting these buckets around and they're filled with weights, obviously. And, you know, he's kickboxing during his downtime, which sounds hilarious. That seems like the main workout, not just like the side. But, yeah, what's Masai about, man? What do you, in getting to know him a little bit, what do you feel drives him?
I feel as though he is, at least the way he describes it, and people who know him, agents, players, you know, coaches, anybody, people in the NBA, you consistently hear somebody, you know, a man who is thriving for something much larger than our imaginations, maybe even much larger than his own. A very intentional dogma, a very intentional and specific ideology of how you can build a culture. Something he learned in Europe as a scout, something he learned from growing up in Zaria, something he learned in America as he was going to college. He is a very driven individual to the point that there's a line in the story about how David Thorpe would call him when he thought his players were going to the club and Masai would be there, or Masai at least knew what club these people might be at. You know what I'm saying? And so you talk about somebody who, while, you know, Toronto might see them as, you know, as again, as David Thorpe says, this cheering person, this, you know, this very amicable human being, he is extremely driven, extremely competitive, and extremely on it. He knows that building and that organization better than probably anybody else. And that's probably what you want for somebody in his position.
Yeah, definitely. Wow. I mean, you know what? For him, like, you have so many great quotes in here with him. You know, can you give us actually just an idea? I should have probably asked you this up top, but like, how much time did you get to spend with him, and sort of how close did you guys get? What kind of places did you guys go? Because some of these quotes are just so raw and honest from Masai, and I think he has that ability to, you know, give a fantastic quote to really touch on something really true and honest about just humanity itself. I don't want to like gas the guy too much, but honestly, like, that's really how he is. So actually, just before we got any further, like, how much time did you get to spend with him over the course of doing this?
No, yeah, we were together for over 16 hours, maybe even close to 18 hours. It was 5 a.m. to midnight with some breaks in between. I think the longest break was kind of me going back to my hotel to change for this gala and get ready for that home opener. But otherwise, honestly, 5 a.m. on. I mean, when I get into a city and I do these profiles on these people, or at least the way I prefer to do them, it is fully hands-on. It is fully transparent. I don't get on the plane, or I don't drive anywhere before, you know, that's how it gets done. Like, that's the only way it can get done. So he was very open to that, and I was very surprised. He wanted to be all in, so he made himself available. They made sure I didn't have to, you know, go anywhere. You know, it was a car here, a car there. And so they, you know, what he has built for that Raptors team, from his position to the custodians, to his assistants, to the people that he pays or that the Raptors pay to make sure that this vision happens, they're all extensions of himself. So whether you're talking to Ray Chow, whether you're talking to anyone on his staff or anyone who works with him, it's almost as if you're talking to him yourself, because they understand it. They get it. People are very much in line there. It was extremely refreshing to see from an organization.
Right, right. And you know what, though, for Masai, though, he's very rare in terms of his position in sports, right? And you just don't see a lot of guys with his background specifically get to the spots. And I mean things in terms of, you know, it wasn't like he was a former player, right? This isn't like, oh, you know, Jason Kidd retires as a player and he is instantly a coach. And then, or, you know, the connections that some of these front offices have, you know, Danny Ainge and you know, the people that sort of are related to the Spurs, for example. Like, Masai is none of these people. Like, when you think about Masai's biggest connections, I'm not really sure if any of those were just given to him. Like, he wasn't born into this. He wasn't just part of this club. Like, he had to get in there. And there's this phrase that I've heard David Thorpe use a few times, you know, in talking about Masai, about the Masai sphere of influence. And that literally covers people from, like, agents to even, like, Barack Obama, for example. So I definitely want to ask you about Masai's relationship with Barack and sort of, you know, what he told you there. But just give us a sense of sort of, like, Masai's sphere of influence and really how does he cultivate these kind of connections to the point where he knows everything about everything that goes on in his organization and also probably beyond in the NBA.
Well, I think it's a combination of things. I think, like I said, it was this time in Europe that taught him how to make a culture, a long-lasting culture, and to probe what those things look like. It was also studying under Colangelo, somebody who knew every aspect of their business. And in some respects, you know, that rubbed off on Masai, where he knows every aspect of the business he's trying to run. But I think even more, you know, in a simpler way, there are no other Black people in American sports, in North American sports, that have the reverence of a city, of a team, of a franchise, and as a matter of fact, of a country like he does. The job that he has, the reverence that y'all give him, is singular in North American sports. There is nobody else like him. even at a GM level. Elton Brand doesn't get this in Philadelphia, right? When Doc Rivers was doing this for the Clippers, LA did not give this to Doc Rivers. Like, this is earned. This is somebody who took one of the lowest salaries in the NBA for a GM, got in with the Nuggets after being an unpaid scout for the Magic and being there a second time, took the money, made a huge trade, won Executive of the Year, set records everywhere, and said that that was only ordinary. His general mindset of how he goes about these things is not to allow himself to be interested by things that he feels are facile. And that's an easy way to build a team, to build a dogma, and to build a sphere of influence.
Yeah, and I think, you know what? In hearing you talk about this and obviously reading your piece as well, like it always strikes me as amazing that how committed Masai is to the job, which is obviously all consuming. Also the fame and the attention that he gets in Toronto, which is also something that's probably going to pull you away from, let's just say, just your humanity when you're just that famous. But at the same time, you can always tell that Masai is a deeply passionate person when it comes to just celebrating humanity, but making sure also that there is equality in everything that he does, right? When you look at the Raptors organization in terms of who he empowers, the people, the backgrounds they come from, you know, he really has this in mind. And you have this great quote in there where Masai's talking about how frustrated he gets at the fact that he's the only Black president in all of sports, right? And how sort of these opportunities aren't given to the people who, let's be real, basketball is played by Black people, like primarily. This is, especially in the NBA, we're looking at probably 70-75% at least. And yet when the players sort of retire, when the coaches retire, you know, you'll see a disproportionate representation in terms of who is in the head coaching spots, who's in the executive spots, who's in the president spots. And that's something Masai wants to change himself. And I guess there's only so much that he can do. He's done it within his own organization. I just think from him, though, he feels this I don't know, maybe the same sort of lack of diversity from his from his fellow presidents and sports executives, just in general.
Yeah, I certainly think he's a bit pissed off by Black representation across at least the field he's in the NBA. And that the power doesn't, you know, it doesn't lie with the people who are the biggest part of the labor pool. It doesn't lie with all those other people. It lies with somebody else. And so the fact that there is no representation to the same extent when it comes to coaches, when it comes to front office executives, when it comes to even presidents, the highest part of how you can get to these organizations, it's not baffling. It's just idiotic. Diversity makes money. It's good for business, as people in the NFL would say. And so why is it that you can have a league that touts itself as the most progressive in the land who can't overtake this hurdle? Mm-hmm. Well, the people who are in those positions are more than fine to be outraged by that.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I also wanted to ask you, just because I saw in your bio that you're from North Philly and you've already name dropped Brian Colangelo, which is actually kind of funny because I think in Toronto, he's not as, you know, popular of a name. And I know in Philly, for sure, he's less popular as a name. You know, as a Philly fan, though, you know, what were your thoughts just last year when the Raptors, you know, Masai was dealing with Kyle Lowry and Kyle was clearly on his way out the door. And there's a lot of talk last year at the trade deadline of, you know what, Kyle might potentially go to three locations. It was L.A., it was Miami where he ultimately went, and then it was Philly. As someone from North Philly, just like the greatest Raptor of all time, Kyle, like, you know, where was your stance on that? Just as a basketball fan, as a Sixer fan, I presume.
Yeah, bring in Kyle Lowry, man. I go for my guys, man. It's North Philly. You know, Kyle has always been good to the city. You know, I see how he runs his programs. I met the people from his AAU team. Like, Kyle is good people, so I want good people on my team. So that's a no-brainer.
Do you feel like it would have saved how last season went for you guys, though?
No, nothing would have saved that.
Really?
No, nothing would have saved that. Come on, man. That was preordained. Nothing was going to save that.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, speaking about the Sixers fandom, though, I believe this was a while ago, and I just remember seeing the timeline at the time, but I remember, I think there was a video that you posted about the fact that you were going through Pearson International Airport and you ran into a mural of Kawhi's shot. Like, that feels like it's got to be a little bit rude as someone visiting.
Yeah, you know, I was on my way out of town. You know, I had a beautiful time in Toronto. I finally understood some of these Drake lyrics. And, okay, you know, on my way out at my terminal, I see this mural. I just felt it was a little disrespectful. But, you know, I think if somebody does that for the team I respect, I would probably also want a mural of something like that. So I can respect that part of it.
No, fair enough. I think actually that I think that's actually Canadian law that every flight that goes from Canada to Philadelphia has to pass by this mural. So that's just good politics right there. Lastly, before we go, I wanted to ask you sort of, is there anything that, you know, as you mentioned, you know, there's you leave no stone unturned. You spend all this time with Masai. Is there anything that maybe didn't make it into the piece or something that, you know, perhaps that really resonated with you, but just, you know, from an editorial standpoint, just couldn't fully find a spot in the story?
No, man. Like I said, we don't try to leave meat on no bones. If I'm going to go out there and report it, we're going to try to have it in that story. So I feel like what you need to know about the man, or at least the things that I was able to ascertain about the man, is I spent time with him and spent some time around what he's built and the people who revere him, the people who rock with him. It's in there. You know what I mean? So if you find something, it would beat me too.
Yeah. All right. Well, Tyler, man, thank you for your time. Thank you for writing this piece once again. Hopefully you come back to Toronto and see that mural again. And yeah, we'll speak soon. Appreciate you.
Yeah, for sure, man. I'm trying to get back to Toronto. So that man, Fred Van Fleet, don't take his foot off the pedal, man. All-star. Come on.
Yeah, you heard it here first. All right. So thanks to Tyler for joining us on the program. Yeah, man, I just in thinking about this piece, I mean, there's just so many great quotes in here about Masai, sort of the person that he is. And the fact that all these came within the course of one day is pretty incredible. You know, when you think about the fact that this man's day starts at 5 a.m. I don't know, game nights probably ends around midnight. And he got kids and he's got a family. It's just, I truly wonder how he has time for all of this and how he takes care of business. But it's an incredible story. Definitely go read it. There's a couple of quotes in here that I wanted to get to from Masai that he gave to Tyler. And I think one of them is just so honest. And, you know, Tyler touched on it too, but this is after he won executive year and he was talking about this and he said, quote, "I was still in it. I was chasing a championship. I didn't even see at the time that I won executive of the year or all the records. All that came to my mind was, how do I do it again? How do you go forward? How do you win? How do you continue to excel? How do you evolve? And at that time I did, that's not success. Oh, you won so many games. You won executive of the year. That's not really success. You're really trying to get here." And he raises an invisible bar above his head for effect. Anything under here, he says, it's ordinary. And that, I mean, like, that is just something where obviously every Raptor fan has seen the Masai interviews, has seen his press conferences. Everyone knows he's a magnetic speaker. But that's truly how he carries himself. That's really how he believes, you know, the standard to be in Toronto. And to have that at the top of your organization and to have that sort of integration with the rest of the franchise is just, it's beautiful to see. And that's why when people talk about, like, you know what, Masai gets paid $15 million or Masai, you know, like, is the highest paid exec in basketball, most likely, if not at the very top, you know, he's got to be close. And it's like, yeah, why not? Of course, he deserves it. Like, you think about, you know, sometimes you don't fully appreciate the fact that what the Raptors were as a franchise before Masai got here, and I mean the second time he got here, because he was already here as an international scout under Brian Colangelo. But when he finally got back here as the main man, as the top man, as in 2013, as boss man, as Serge Ibaka called it, that part onwards, it's a totally different story. Before 2013, there were no real happy stories about the Raptors. It was cute. People loved the dinos. People loved the jerseys. Vince was cool. Tracy was cool, even though his best years were clearly not in Toronto. They were past that. It was more about the what if. But with Tracy, Chris Bosh had his, you know, did his thing as well. But there was not a happy memory really about being a Raptor fan beyond the fact that they're from Toronto, beyond the fact that this is the city that this is the team in the city that you can most accessibly get to the games. And then Masai comes here and he changed everything, right? So that, I think, you know, any sort of opportunity to cherish this man, you have to do it, because he is, you know, you don't go anywhere great without leadership, and he is the foundation and the bedrock of that leadership. So that's also for us today. I'm your host, Will Liu, and you've been listening to The Raptor Show, powered by DoorDash on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Make sure you find The Raptor Show wherever you listen to podcasts, and subscribe, and please rate and review our show. Thanks again to my producer and co-host, Alex Wong, to our guest, Tyler Tynes, and our board producer, Dylan Brown. We will talk to you tomorrow.